Most of the Jews Centropa interviewed in Austria were born in Vienna, then one of the largest Jewish communities in the world. But here's a story that starts in rural Austria, and it was told to us by Heinz Bissich.
If you leave Vienna and drive southwards, past the elegant spa town of Baden, you'll find the village of Oberwaltersdorf. Back in 1932, on the 19th of April to be precise, the only Jewish man in the village, Fritz Bischitz, went into his back garden, dug a hole, and planted a walnut tree in honor of his first son and who would be his only child. That was me, Heinz Bischitz. My father didn't know it then, but we had only a few more years to live in Oberwaltersdorf before our neighbors stole everything we had, and our family had to run for our lives. We certainly never lived there again. There are no more Jews in Oberwaltersdorf. But that walnut tree, it's still there. My father's side of the family came from a small town called Mattersburg, which was sometimes in Hungary and sometimes in Austria. Fritz Bischitz went to school in Budapest, where he met Irene Knöpfler, and they were married in the Doja Jorg Synagogue in 1920, surely one of the most elegant synagogues in the city then. And that synagogue meant the world to my father. And 23 years later, during the war, well, I'll tell you about that later. My paternal grandparents lived in a village called Teesdorf, and my parents moved to the next village, Oberwaltersdorf. I think that's because there was no general store in Oberwaltersdorf, so they opened a store that sold groceries, fresh produce, clothes, and even sewing machines and farm equipment. We got along with everyone. That's probably because of my father. He was a larger-than-life character. He loved to play football with people in town. He raced motorcycles. He met them in the local pub. He really was one of the most popular men in town. Then came the Anschluss, and that ended his popularity. People who we thought had been our friends immediately showed up on our doorstep and started taking our things. They Aryanized our car. They took my father's motorcycle. They even Aryanized the family bicycle. My grandparents were forced to leave Teesdorf and moved to Vienna. As for us, Uncle Oscar arrived from Budapest and he was driving a giant black car. Oscar Yu was married to my mother's sister Magda. He was not Jewish and worked for the Japanese embassy in Hungary as their chauffeur, hence the car. First he took me with him and he used his son's ID papers. Then he returned with forged papers and took my parents and Aunt Ilona. We got out just in time. My grandparents were forced to live in Vienna in a tiny apartment with other Jews until they were deported to the ghetto Theresienstadt. And later in 1943, they were sent to Treblinka, where they were murdered. As for us, in 1938, we started life over in Budapest in the 13th district, just where my father had lived and gone to school. On the first day of school, the director, an old gentleman with striped pants and a white beard, stopped me and asked who this new student was. Bischitz, I said. Bischitz? And very slowly he asked, are you by chance related to Fritz Bischitz? My father, I told him. Oh God, he said, why me? But things were not so easy. Each year that went by in my school, more and more boys started calling me a Jewish pig. And just like my father had taught me, I didn't take it. Even though I was just 10 years old, I was getting into one fight after another. I stood my ground. Soon, the Hungarians passed another set of anti-Jewish laws. My father was drafted into forced labor, and they sent him into Ukraine with the Hungarian army. Then March 1944. The Germans occupied Hungary. And believe me, the Hungarians were happy to help with the roundup of Jews. They came for my mother, and she was taken away. I was thrown out of school, and our apartment house was turned into a yellow star house. The Hungarian police shoved more and more Jewish families into it, 10 people in a room. By October, the government of Admiral Horthy had fallen, and the Arrow Cross, the Hungarian fascists, had taken over, and I was now forced into the Budapest ghetto. They were murdering Jews on the streets. I saw this. When things were getting really bad in the ghetto, one day Uncle Oscar showed up carrying a leather jacket that had the Arrow Cross insignia on it. He told me to put it on, and we walked out of the ghetto, giving the Heil Hitler salute. For the second time, he saved me. Uncle Oscar took me to a monastery, again with forged papers. "You'll be safe here," he told me. But one night, the Arrow Cross broke into our bedroom to look for Jewish boys. They shouted, "Covers off!" and wanted to see who was circumcised. I was in the last row. When they came to me, I shouted as loud as I could, "As far as I'm concerned, you can take all of these Jew pigs with you now, but I want to sleep." I pulled the covers over my head, turned over, and pretended to go back to sleep. They moved on. I knew they'd be back, so I slipped away later that night, and hiding in the shadows, I made it to Uncle Oscar's. Only later did I find out that, yes, the Arrow Cross did come back, and every Jewish boy was taken to the Danube and shot. I have never gotten over this, even now. The next morning, Uncle Oscar took me to a Swedish protected house run by the diplomat Raoul Wallenberg, and Oscar said, "There's someone I'd like you to meet." In front of me stood my father, who had just come back from forced labor. We fell into each other's arms. We had little to eat, no other clothes to change into, but we could hear the Soviet army approaching. They were bombarding Budapest with their massive artillery and bombing from the air. With every bomb that fell, I rejoiced. After all I was seeing, I wanted those bombs to fall. Suddenly, one freezing morning in January, 1945, the doors of our house were thrown open. The Soviet army. We welcomed them. They were like gods to me. I tore off my yellow star, and for the first time in years, I didn't have to be afraid anymore. The very next day, I went back to my school, looking for every boy who had called me a Jewish pig. Did they ever run? Some didn't run fast enough. Now we had to find out what had happened to my mother, and one day at the Red Cross, I learned that she had survived Dachau and was in an American hospital in Germany. We got word to her. We all met in Vienna, and we started life over. I was growing taller, I was strong, a good swimmer, and something else, a proud Jew. And I let everyone know it. Never again would I hide my Judaism. I have to say that after the war, Vienna was occupied by the Americans, the British, the French, and the Soviets. And our family lived in the Soviet zone. It really did look like the Cold War was about to get hot. So when the Korean War started in 1950, my parents decided we would emigrate to Argentina, and for two reasons. One, we had family there. Two, my parents were not going anywhere where their son might end up in anyone's army. All three of us, my father, my mother, and me, we had witnessed too much. That is how traumatized we were. So, for the third time, we started life over in a new country, in a new language. My parents opened a textile factory, and in our apartment house, I met Ida Lubavitz. Ida was from Poland, spoke Yiddish and Spanish, and after hiding during the war, came to Argentina. We married in 1957 and had two children, a son and a daughter. But the economic situation in Argentina went from bad to worse, and in 1984, we moved back to Vienna. All survivors of the Holocaust look at the world in ways others just don't. I was only 6 when we left Austria, so I didn't see the horrors here. But I watched one Hungarian after another shooting Jews. That is where I direct my hatred. But my wife, Ida, spent the war hiding from the Germans and the Austrians in the SS, who murdered over 10,000 Jews in her hometown of Lutsk. Ida has had a harder time in Vienna than I have, and our daughter went back to Argentina as soon as she could. In other words, the past doesn't leave us alone. The horrible things, but sometimes the good things. I remember what my father told me in January 1945 as we left Hungary and were on the way to find my mother again. We were walking along, and sometimes riding, with the Soviet soldiers on the way west. He told me about where he had disappeared to when he left Uncle Oscar's for a couple of hours. He said that in late 1943, when he was in forced labor in Ukraine, his battalion came upon a museum in some town, and this museum had been bombed and destroyed. All the other soldiers grabbed whatever valuables they could find that was scattered about. But Fritz Bischitz saw a Torah lying there. So he picked it up. It was a large one, full size, and he lugged it with him all the way back to Budapest, by foot, by train, by truck. Then he hid it in Uncle Oscar's flat. After the fighting stopped in January 1945, and we had heard from my mother, he took that Torah to the Doja Jorg synagogue where he and my mom had been married. The place was a wreck, but a rabbi and some helpers were putting it back in order. And my father handed this Torah over to them. They didn't have another one. They thanked him. Then he came to fetch me, and we rushed off to find my mother.
Heinz Bissich was read for us by Alan Corduner in London. Sound design and music by Ivo Spasov in Sofia. Tanya Eckstein interviewed Heinz in Vienna in 2003. Heinz passed away in 2018.